Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. We are with David Orr in Oberlin, Ohio. Bill Russell?
The same baby that Paula was looking at, talking with their parents. There's something you say in this book that is, I knew it, but I had not registered it. It's as if with this child, I punched him, which would be a nasty thing to do.
This is a newborn. It can break.
And he isn't going to know. My action isn't going to show up for 30 years. And I think that's part of what confuses us so much about this issue. It's sort of the slow motion. A lot of it's happening other places. But that time lag is very confusing. We are already well down paths. And part of the challenge seems to be we think we still got a little time. I'll get to it next week.
Yeah.
But we're already well down the slope.
We're already at 2039, effectively, sitting here in 2009.
We're seeing ice melt quite unpredictably and quite unexpectedly in Antarctica and Greenland and the North Pole at rates we didn't understand or appreciate or expect, even as late as 2005.
Mm.
And so if you simply look at the scientific evidence here, it's getting bigger, it's getting faster. And, you know, I say this to audiences all over the country, but if when you stand behind a podium, if I was to reach back behind a podium and pull out a shotgun and kind of ram a couple of shells, you know, snap it shut and walk toward the audience, I have their attention because what kicks in is their adrenal fight-flight mechanism. They're either going to head for the door or rush me, but there's something going to happen. But when they see on the screen behind me parts per million and parts per billion, that's a snoozer. People don't get that. So we have to, we in education, I think, have to equip people to understand that your future, your career, your life, your livelihood, everything you count on, everything you love and hold dear, depends on your understanding how the world works as a physical system. And most people don't. New climate data being released by Yale University, Tony Lazarowicz at Yale. And what they've done is to look at climate knowledge, people all around the world. And we are the most confused of the developed countries. Americans and the number of people saying that they think this is a serious problem has dropped back to 55%. It's declined nearly, I think it's 20%. Half of those still don't believe that humans are the cause of the problem. Now, this gets us real quickly into issues of governance. This is not a marketable, solvable problem. This means that the control of the airwaves, of which you're a part and I'm a part, those are public airwaves. That's the public commons. But they're being used to confuse and muddy the water, and that's a political
issue. Well, we talk about this a lot. It's as if we've got the circus going on the public airwaves while the city of Rome is burning.
It's worse than that. I've been thinking about this, and your book drove it. There's a classic line about yelling fire in a theater and how it's considered bad form to do that. We have a large portion of the nominal political class in this country and the media who not only yell fire in the theater, that's all they do. They walk in yelling fire. They yell fire during the movie. They yell fire and all the way through it.
Mm-hmm. And they're lying.
I think that one of the major challenges is we have allowed ourselves, we've been entertained to death or about to be entertained to death, but we've allowed ourselves to engage those people in a conversation, and they're a very small minority.
Oh, I agree. You know, there are two things that strike you about this. Three things, maybe. Our response to the Cold War was such, or to the rise of the Soviet Union after World War II, was such that we measured threats in parts per billion. And there was nothing we wouldn't pay to do. And that was always kind of a hypothetical.
Well,
we know
it
now,
also
having
turned
gotten
out
into
not
their
to
archives,
be the case.
That there was really no plan to take out the United States unless they thought we were going to do it first. But we paid, there was no price that we wouldn't pay, no burden we wouldn't bear.
And then we did.
The same thing, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck have made themselves, and Sean Hannity made themselves very noisy on this issue.
And very rich.
And very rich. And yet if one of the three of them, or their listeners and fans, finds a lump or feels a sudden heart pain, they go to a doctor, and the doctor says, well, look, you've got to have an operation, and here's what we have to do. It's not dismissed as, oh, well, that's a liberal thing. They may want a second opinion, but they treat science when it comes to the Earth and the future of all life on the planet, and science when it comes to their own body, in radically different ways. And there's a third thing about this, and this gets into conjecture. If I can go out on a limb for just a moment. In the 20th century, we had, looking at human behavior, we had to come up with words like genocide. Mm-hmm. That didn't exist. There probably had been genocide before. Well, we know there was genocide back in history. But it was so bad and so industrialized and so cold-blooded, and just stone cold, mean, and evil. We had to come up with a word for it, and words like Holocaust and genocide. And what is the language that we would use for people who encouraged us, who lied to us, in an attempt to encourage us to risk the fate of the entire Earth? What's the language? What are the words? Let alone the laws that would prohibit that. You have no right to confuse and to muddy the water on issues that when everything is at stake. And that debate hasn't begun. I don't know where to begin that debate, but that's a legal but moral issue.
Interestingly enough, the cup that I carry and use, so as not to use styrofoam, has emblazoned on it the Universal Rights of Human...
Declaration of Human Rights.
Thank you. I drink from the cup. I don't read it.
It's in the small print.
It is that kind of thinking that must begin to be global, that must begin to be universal rights of all living beings. Because what you're talking about isn't just humanity. You're talking about species that are falling by the wayside in just calamitous numbers. You're talking about changes that are so profound that life will not be recognized as it is today. This will look like Eden because it will have changed so much.
Well, you have, in the case of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, I'm told that they never set foot in a college, or certainly a college science class. And so before they're allowed to pontificate about climate change, there ought to be some effort to by their employers to inform them about, here's how the Earth works, physical system. It isn't Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. It's just how it works as a system. But
but there's no money in
I think people have a right to be stupid in public if they want to be stupid in public.
It's called the First Amendment.
It's the First Amendment, and I think that's a very important attribute. And in fact, I wish we would use it more than rather than less.
Right.
So much of the challenge. This is the classic: if good men do nothing and women, then bad things are going to happen. And a lot of it, and we're all, you've been out front and very public for a long time. A lot of us sat quietly and assumed that these people would see the light, or it didn't matter that they didn't know what they were talking about because they really had no influence, which turned out not to be the case. And I think part of what's so important about what you've done is you've said publicly, forcefully, intelligently, accessibly, which is not always easy, what the case is, without overstating it, but also for the first time, pretty much in public, without understating it, which is very important. I say all that because rather than, I'm very reluctant to tell somebody they can't say what they want to say.
You know, I agree. And here's the rub. The First Amendment is incredibly valuable. So valuable that you don't give some people the right to a huge megaphone and other people virtually the right to no megaphone.
Absolutely.
And so what's happened is that the Supreme Court, in a decision, I think in 1977, Buckley versus Valeo, said that the rights of free speech are also held by corporations. And this is a chain of legal logic that goes back to a decision by the Supreme Court.
A not decision.
The Santa Clara County decision.
A not decision.
Which was, never made. It's something written in the headnotes by the secretary to the court.
Who was a railroad lawyer.
That's
former.
Right. That's
corrupt.
Right. And corrupt. And the Chief Justice, Justice Waite here in Toledo, was not feeling very well. And so Bancroft was the guy that wrote this thing that said, ostensibly, that the court acknowledged that corporations are legal persons.
And since we are based on common law, that then accreted to a place where they are treated that way.
Well, the mischief in that is so obvious. And the mischief is that you and I are persons. And so we're mortal. We can only be in one place at one time. We have assets limited. we're going to die, and we are ethical creatures. Corporations are none of the above. And so to say that corporation has the rights of free speech in the same manner that you and I have those rights. And so there was a corruption of that First Amendment way back when. And that
was both the First and the 14th Amendment, which gave rights to black men. But who? Mm-hmm. So it was also playing on another part of the Constitution that got warped.
That's right.
Well, you might
reminds us that the Constitution is a human document.
Well, the Civil War amendments, 13, 14, 15 amendments, were aimed at something radically different. They were corrupted in that era, and we've never gone back to correct the corruption. So, Bill, I agree that the First Amendment, freedom of speech, is incredibly important. It is so important, it should not be corrupted. And in the size of the megaphone, as much as we can possibly make this in public policy, by access over the commons, we call it airwaves, ought to be as equal as possible. And so the big change here, of course, was the way the fair and balanced
Fairness was undermined.
Fairness doctrine of 1949 was undermined by Reagan FCC.
Pretty much tossed.
And so you can go south of here and you get into a bubble where about all the commentary and news is right-wing talk radio. And I can't challenge that. The FCC won't entertain the challenges. And so what the public gets in the study done by the Center for American Progress a few years ago, 91% of talk radio is extreme right wing. And by definition, they don't think climate change is an issue. But they won't let somebody else on the program. And those other radio stations or television stations tend to think of balance as you have say Jim Hansen on, and then you put a Richard Lindzen on. And the fact that Hansen speaks for 99.9% of the people who study climate for a living and have to live by the rigors of peer review, logic, data, fact, and evidence doesn't matter. You always have to have someone else. As if the rights of your grandchild are going to be debated by Mother Teresa and Heinrich Himmler. And we call
that
somehow balance.
Again. That would be Mother Teresa and Heinrich Himmler. That would be the bad guys, I mean the baddest of the bad guys.
Well, it'd be fair and balanced by this corrupted definition of it.
And it is a corrupted definition. It's worth saying that one of the things you've done brilliantly in Down to the Wire, Confronting Climate Collapse, is to go through and talk about the evidence. You have done a masterful job in going across all kinds of things that all of us should have read, and most of us haven't, and putting it all in one place so that it's not conjecture. This is the evidence. Mm-hmm. You like it or leave it, I'm going to treat you as adults. Imagine that. Sentient beings. Yeah. And let you have a chance to think about it. And then, when we come back in a moment, act on what we should know, must know, and can know moving forward. We're in Oberlin, Ohio. Actually, we're in the president's office of Oberlin College in Oberlin, Ohio, which will become relevant as we continue the conversation. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, David Orr. Please be with us when we return in a moment.